Did you know? The Cartoonist Co-op is hosting a month-long comics event called the Nib and Ink Festival, and Screen Tones is taking part. Join us during the month of May, where creators of the Screen Tones webcomic podcasts are taking signups for webcomic portfolio reviews, where you can show us your work and we'll write a summary of the most engaging parts we find, as well as facets to hone to retain readership, increase reader understanding for parts that may be confusing, and other recommendations to help you meet your creative vision and goals. Check out www.screentonescast.com/portfolio-reviews for more information, and we'll see you in May at the Nib and Ink Festival.
Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday said tomorrow. So just do it! Face your dreams! I'm true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Screen Tones, where we talk anything and everything webcomics. Today, we're going to be talking about collaborative projects. I'm Rennie, I use she, they pronouns, and I make the webcomic Aetherstar.
And I'm Delphina, I use she, her pronouns, and I make the webcomic Zombulus.
And I'm Verithane, I use she, they pronouns, and I make the webcomics Geralt and Witchwood.
Yeah, webcomics can be a lonely road to walk if you're only ever sticking to your own story, but collaborative projects with other creators can really be worth your time. Sometimes these take the form of printed or digital releases of books or zines, and sometimes these are centered around a theme or a fandom, or sometimes they're just a your character here style with simple graphics. Folks have done all kinds of things over the years as collaborations, and for webcomic artists, it can be not only a ton of fun, but a great way to cross-promote your own webcomic to similar audiences. So let's talk about what you need to think about when starting your own collaborative projects. So we'll start with you, Delphi. What sort of projects have you ran or participated in as far as collaborative works, and what were some of your favorite ones?
Oh my gosh. I feel like I got into webcomics because specifically I wanted to like be part of communities and part of community projects. So this is very near and dear to my heart. I feel like I've been a member of the Spider Forest webcomic collective for more than a decade now. Jesus. And time. I know. And there's so many good collaborative projects over there that we've done over the past 13 years. So like, you know, you've got your standard like Secret Santa sorts of things, or someone will draw a background and draw little positions for putting your characters in. And that's what we call a your character here, or YCH, if you see that around. So those are like fun little things. And I think I really like a space where some of those are going like once a month or something like that, because it's low stakes, it's low effort. You can kind of throw together things. There's also kind of holiday centric things. I know we've done page exchanges on April Fool's. So I have my webcomic, somebody else has their webcomic, but on April Fool's Day, I draw a page of their webcomic and make a little joke or something, and vice versa. And so we kind of post those and, you know, we got a new artist, guys, look at this thing. So I think that's pretty fun too, if you can make that work around April 1st. I'd also count like group tables at conventions as a type of collaboration. I know at TCAF last year, we did a little like stamp rally with some other artists. And so that was a little collaborative project.
Oh, I loved the idea of the stamp rally. Like one of my favorite things to do at conventions is the little scavenger hunt thing. So tying that into your and other webcomics it's so fun.
Yeah. And the idea is collaborating and making, you know, guiding your audience to somebody else's place, right? And so there's that. Those are like kind of smaller scale things, I would say. Like it's one day, you plan it for a month or so, but it's done after one day and everybody has fun. I think there's also some longer type projects or projects that involve money, anthologies. We try to do those in Spider Forest quite a bit, where there's a few people who contribute small short comics and we print them all in a book, in a physical book, in a digital book, and we run a little Kickstarter to fund the printing of that. So that takes a lot more coordination for sure. But the result is always really cool. And I think it has a lot of value because people sometimes are scared in the webcomic realm to dive into the print side of things because they don't know about the specs or working with printers or running a crowdfund. So doing that as a team is kind of a nice way to get your feet wet when you're nervous about all of those aspects of things, and you can kind of see it in a little more personal level than just as a consumer. So that's a really valuable project too. Podcasts, gosh, I don't know. I guess we do podcasts sometimes around here.
You think?
And I personally have been on three different webcomic podcasts. So Spider Forest did have a webcomic podcast once upon a time. And we did little interviews and roundtable discussions for that. Webcomic Alliance was my second podcast. And that was mostly convention folks. But we had a little team of five people who got together every Wednesday and talked about a topic or whatever we were struggling with for a while. And that was pretty fun. And of course, Green Tones. So these to me are really interesting. They don't have a set end date. We're not particularly making any money at this, but it's just so much fun to talk to other comic creators on a regular basis. And I've heard so many great things from all of the podcast years that I've done, where people just really appreciate like a podcast episode. They know like they're not alone or something like that. And so it's one of those things where like you're making something for the community, but you're not necessarily seeing the impact of like all the people it's reaching. But it's so cool to see. I'm so proud of our community and everything we've done with you guys. It's so good. But yeah, just so many good things. I think on the money side of things, the Cartoonist Co-op has been doing some things. I am a member of the Cartoonist Co-op, and they do itch.io bundles where people contribute digital comics to group, like a bundle. And so you have like a specific time frame where you're selling this bundle and everybody gets a little cut of the money. That was a really cool experience. I'd never done that before, and it actually worked pretty smoothly. And another pretty unique one that I was part of a while back, I guess last year now, was the Booktopia event with Backer Kit. So Backer Kit is kind of moving into the same space as Kickstarter. People can fund projects on there similar to Kickstarter, but Backer Kit is really working on the collaborative angle of doing campaigns. And so you can actually be part of their Topia events, and they've got Pintopia, they've got Booktopia, they've got Comictopia, and they gather 20 or so people who all run a campaign at the same time and offer cross collaborative awards. So if you back my campaign and you back this other guy's campaign, you unlock a little special thing for your that's available only to people who back both.
Special combo.
Yeah, it's a combo thing. I'd never heard of that before.
That's really cool. Oh my
but
God.
I think it's really unique compared to Kickstarter, because it does feel like Kickstarter is more like you're competing with other people, maybe, or you're like, maybe there's some cross collaboration things if you can like reach out to somebody and say, hey, can you mention me in your update? But I think that's the differentiator that Backer Kit's going for, is like they want to be collaborative. And so they have opened up tools, even if you're not part of their Topia events, where you and another person could say, hey, we're linked and we want to link our accounts. So keep track of who like backs both of our campaigns and we'll do a special thing. So I think that's pretty cool on the collaboration front as well, and something that I hope more comic people take advantage of.
The book bundle thing is a really neat idea. I think actually way back in the day, like Spider Forest did one of those too. And more recently, the Chimera Comics Collective did like a itch.io book bundle that worked really well. It's like a great way to kind of collect people together. It's like a bit of logistical work to kind of get everything organized there, but otherwise it's usually stuff people have already. And yeah, it's a neat promotional tool. For my own like history of these things, I feel like I'm doubling up on a lot of what Delphi has done because of the Spider Forest thing. There's just so many like Spider Forest projects that are very collaborative and interesting, like the anthologies way back in the time of the dinosaurs. I helped out with kind of getting the first one. I did like pre-press and stuff like that and contributed stories to, I think, the first five, but not the sixth. Mostly just helping out with them, like running the Kickstarters and stuff like that. I also, the TCAF stamp rally was a ton of fun. It was not as much, it was really not a lot of work. I did the stamp printing, like organized that locally, which was probably the most like kind of out there thing. And then the rest of it was basically just like, let's print some flyers, make sure everybody has a stamp, and then just kind of put the flyers somewhere that con attendees could find, and then they will just find us. And it worked really well. Like people kept coming up with like the flyers, and people would come like just to like, do they really wanted to fill the sheet. Like it was like collecting Pokemon. It like scratched that itch for them. So that was a ton of fun. There was one other project that I organized along with Crispy, which is these little zines. We use the name Seven Smith to kind of publish them, which is like my old website handle. And the basic idea was just that we would pick a theme that we were really interested in, that we knew a lot of our artist friends were also interested in. And we would just all do an illustration about those themes. And we used like the themes in particular were like battle damage and death and decay. It was basically letting people just run wild with their unhinged interests and then collect it together into little books. So we did small Kickstarters for each one. Nothing too like elaborate with these, just like little stapled volumes that would have like one illustration per person. And I think there were only about 16 in one and like 19 in the other. So they weren't very long either, but like really beautiful stuff got put together for them. And it's just very nice to kind of see something at the end of that. And then of course there's Screen Tones, this little known, you might not have heard of it, podcast. Yeah, they've been a ton of fun.
Yeah, I think the zines too are cool. Like again, because like you have something that you could put on your table. If maybe you're just starting out with conventions and you're not really sure about like how to get books together, or you only have your one webcomic series and that's it. So if somebody's not interested in that, there's nothing else there. Like, yeah, zines are so cool. I feel like I always want to get involved in more of them and then I don't.
And zines can be a very low barrier entry for certain types of zines and zine festivals. I know a lot of more of the underground zine festivals, you can basically just make a zine on whatever you want, whether it's like, I really like these characters from the show I like, so here's a side story about it, or here's a artsy piece about like politics or whatever. And like, you can do whatever you want with zines, and they're just folded pieces of paper. So they're very low cost, low stakes entry point for a lot of people into different types of projects.
Yeah, we deliberately, like with those zines, our goal was like, they weren't comics. It wasn't like a do a whole short story. We wanted to keep things like pretty low, like pressure for the creators who were getting involved in it, especially because there was no like, we knew that it was not going to like make enough money that we could pay people beyond like sending all the contributors like copies of the zines as like their like, here's your reward. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So just like one-off illustrations, like one page, cool picture of something that you already like, we're going to put it together and like at the end have like a big credits list. So it kind of functions as like a cross promo as well. And yeah, it went over pretty well. I think
had
a lot of fun.
It definitely looked it. I know for myself, a lot, I've been more active in the anthology side of things. I was one of three editors on two different projects, both with the Boston Comics Roundtable. One of them was an anthology called Being True, which was a compilation of different stories, fiction, nonfiction, all about, you know, all around the theme of being true. And the other one was Starbound, which was same sort of premise, but with, you know, a space theme for sci-fi and looking to the stars. And both of those were intended as projects that were to be printed and that creators would make some money from it. It wasn't much. It ended up being pizza money, but there was an expectation that if you contributed to those anthologies, you were going to get paid. So there was a certain level of pressure added to that, which for those works, we curated those with a specific plan for, you know, what we were going to be selling at conventions, what each creator would get, each creative team, what expectations were, and did the work sort of fit the overall themes of each of those projects. And the key thing for that was it was a collaboration on a multiple different levels, as far as we had the team of three of us running the actual behind the scenes organizing and doing the editorial part, actually reviewing each comic and helping people sort of keep things on track, and then collaborating with many different creators, some of which were in different countries and had different sort of backgrounds and setups for their work. So it was a lot of fun, despite how many times I wanted to pull my hair out. I feel like with every collaborative project, there are multiple different phases where it's the you enter with excitement and it starts climbing and you're riding the wave. It's great. And then you reach funding stage and it becomes stressful. And then by the end of that, you're like, I just want this book out of my house. And then about a year later, you're like, yeah, I want to do that again.
The cycle continues.
In fairness, I go through that cycle even with my own projects that are not collaborative.
It's so true. So I had have a lot of experience based on those anthology projects. And those were, you know, mostly on a local basis. But we also worked with, you know, people online and people we didn't know. So it's, you know, you don't want to be too afraid to sort of open up and broaden the appeal for your work and for who you want to be represented in it based on what your goals are for the work.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, everyone's got something different going on in their life, right? So it's just trying to like keep everything together and keep everybody aligned. That's like, that's so important.
Yeah, the herding cats is the phrase of many collaborative team. And on that, I guess we'll move on to our next question, which is what are the biggest challenges that you faced in getting your collaborations across the finish line?
Okay, so for me, like, it all boils down to communication, I feel like, because like the first thing is if you're leading a project and other people are following the same pattern, people need to know technical things like the size of the thing, the resolution they need to work at, the deadlines that they need to meet. And you're going to have to tell them over and over again in various different ways. So working out how that's going to happen, if that's going to be a group email or something, is the most important challenge to address right off the bat, because otherwise people are going to be kind of, you're going to run into one of two things. Like, you're going to go radio silent and everyone's going to forget, or you're gonna like go a little too hard on things and like just do the deadline approaches, where is your stuff? And that can be a little demoralizing and make everything a little harder. And especially for collaborations where there's no significant money involved, people start getting what I call wiggly, like, Oh, you know, I know I said I would do this thing, but I'm not done with the thing. It isn't coming together super easily for me. There's a lot of other things in my life right now, and this is looking more and more like something I want to drop. So they start wiggling. They want to wiggle out. And this is normal. We're human. That's going to happen in anything. You do have to expect it. And, you know, even the most reliable person in the world, there are some life situations that cannot be foreseen and will take somebody's availability away. So just knowing that going in is something that will preserve you, your sanity as an organizer of a collaborative project, and not like feel like you're doing a bad job or something like that. But communication is definitely going to help with that. And yeah, just morale is another challenge. Things are gonna take a while sometimes, especially if you have a really big idea, like for a zine or an anthology or something with a non-defined deadline. It's gonna keep going, and people are gonna have stuff to do, and it's not gonna be as cool and shiny anymore at some point. And so you do have a role as a organizer to keep things exciting, change things up when you need like a breath of fresh air, or you need to take the project in a new direction that makes everybody excited about it again. And that's not, I think the other thing too is a challenge can be when you think that it's all on you as the person who came up with this idea to bust through it, to take charge, to make all the decisions. But the beauty of collaborative projects is that there's a lot of other people involved. You're asking for help from other people who are intelligent and that you respect on some level. And so I think you can make a big mistake by isolating yourself from them, or pretending that like you're the boss and they're the employees or something. Just like, I think I see it a little bit sometimes when people feel like they're the ones who are like, well, I'm doing everything around here and you guys aren't doing anything and blah, 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 blah. And like, you can't go in with that. You absolutely cannot. You have to make sure that everybody feels valued and respected, and that we're all sitting at the same table trying to achieve the same goal. And that can be challenging.
Yeah, I think the stamina is definitely the biggest, like probably the single biggest challenge that goes through it, because it's very easy to stay excited in a project during the honeymoon phase when it's all new. And you're just like, wow, the potential of this thing, it's gonna be so cool.
Ooh,
and you've got
shiny.
Those daydreams, a beautiful glittery shape to like move towards. As soon as it actually starts taking shape, that's when it starts feeling a lot less glamorous and a lot more like work. And that tends to be when people start to have their energy starts to flag. Like, there's other projects coming up, there's life. Everybody's got to live their life, and things are generally going to it'll appear like things are slowing down. People might need a bit more poking to like stay involved in things. For the most part, making sure to have like a plan for like communication is probably the best way to kind of keep that up, like scheduling communications in advance, just making sure things are like still rolling, but those reminders do ultimately go out, because especially if you're the organizer of the thing, if you disappear, that's a big problem for everybody else. So staying like in touch with everybody is huge. I think generally for like marketing as well, it follows a lot of the same kind of trends as that. Like, you can make a beautiful shiny graphic for it that gets everybody like, wow, I'm so pumped for this, this is going to be so cool. But to actually keep your project like in front of the public and to get eyes on it and to keep that attention and interest, especially during it, it's both during the campaign itself, but like also throughout, like how do you keep up coming up with more messages for that? So thinking about that kind of ahead of time is going to be good. So marketing as well. Another thing that is going to be a headache for any project that takes physical form, it's like the shipping side of things. Once you have your amazing project printed, I find that tends to be where people also tend to run into the biggest problems, especially if you're new to the whole thing. Like, how are you going to package this thing? Also, something to keep in mind is that a lot of postal services often raise their rates, and they do it once a year usually, but some other times a year at other points. So if you do a campaign in the fall and then ship it after January, there's a good chance that the rates will have gone up since you charged people for that shipping. And keeping that in mind, building a little bit of like padding in to those numbers is going to be a good idea. If you're doing something that involves like financial, like spending like a crowdfunder, and you're going to have to pay for shipping and you're going to have to pay for printing, all these things, it is a really good idea just to make sure that you're personally in a good financial place, or at least an okay financial place, before jumping into that. Because if there is any shortfall, like even if it's possible for the campaign to make every single goal and you still end up having to pay out of pocket for some of the shipping, because things go up, packages bounce, unexpected expenses come up. So just make sure that you have a plan for to deal with that ahead of time.
And piggybacking on that, it's if you are doing a multi-year project where you are paying, you know, collaborators, or there's a financial element where, like, say, you do a crowdfunding campaign and get a large check coming into your account based for the project, depending on where you live, you may have tax implications on that. So making sure that as you're going through that, keep every receipt and keep every payment to people, because each of those things are things that you can deduct on the taxes or manage as far as making sure that the finances stay stable. And that includes shipping.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, you do have to have a financial person. Like, it doesn't have to be the person like running the show, but it has to be somebody that everybody trusts, because you will kind of need to take personal responsibility for getting the money and using the money in like your PayPal or your checking account. And sometimes it also means fronting some money, even if you're going to be reimbursed later. So to echo what Thane was saying, like, make sure that you're in an okay financial spot where that's not going to financially ruin you. And just, again, with the communication, like, people get really nervous about money. People get really nervous about when they're being paid, and if they're not being paid when they were told they were going to be paid, like that can really destroy trust. So being as open as possible, like, okay, we haven't received the money from the Kickstarter yet. I will let you guys know when we do. And this is the plan going forward. First, we're going to buy the books. Then we're going to buy the shipping things. Then we're going to be mailing things. And then we're going to be paying you. So we'll keep you updated every step of the way. That can do a lot financially for that kind of trust.
Yeah. And I think that leads sort of into my biggest challenge that I've had is making sure that that plan actually is sort of managing all the different moving parts of the project is very difficult. So going into the project with any of the collaborators you're going on, it's always important to have a solid plan and have it written down and have that plan be specific. Like, do you want the inks, say you want the inks submitted after the pencils? Like, okay, duh. But when do you want the inks? Do you want the inks from them on next Tuesday at midnight? Or do you want them in 2077? Be specific. Because if you are not specific, people will not follow it. And it's just human nature.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that another challenge that I personally ran into, which is probably a bit different from the other two here, is just that I'm in Canada. And so a lot of this, the financial side of things and the shipping and fulfillment side of things, most people who buy things online in general, not just from Kickstarters, but from like everything, like all the stores and whatnot, are largely based in the US, which means that almost all of my shipments are international. So I have to make sure to take that into account My dollar does not go as far, and I'm going to have to basically I assume from the get-go that about 90% or more of my sales are going to be across an international border. So that's been something that I just have to think about and take into account as I plan these things.
Oh, 1,000%. And I know that's the case with, I know a lot of creators in the UK and Europe have similar issues as far as getting your work into people's hands. And part of that I've found is getting copies to your creators is important. And I know one of my projects was during the pandemic where shipping these books to Australia was very difficult at points, but it's important to have that plan in place where someone's going to place an order and it's going to be shipped to a place that has 200% more higher shipping costs than you anticipated. But as was mentioned earlier, if you have that buffer, you can absorb it. Whereas if you don't plan on that buffer, it's going to be tight.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that was really attractive to me. I mentioned a little bit about like BackerKit and itch.io too. It's just like, you can kind of circumvent some of the personal responsibility of that when you have a platform that allows individual accounts contribute to like the group goal, because then everybody is kind of responsible for their own taxes, responsible for their own shipping, or in the case of itch.io, it's all digital and you don't have to worry about that. So those are some things too, if that aspect makes you nervous.
Which I guess that brings us to our last question, which I guess is, what is your advice to someone who's looking to start a collaborative project, but isn't really sure what to do? Delphi.
All right. So I think you kind of have to establish some roles. The coordinator, who's like kind of the person with the vision and person who wants to spearhead what the project should be. Or at the very least, the one person who has the calendar in front of them at all times and will be able to make the final call as new decisions need to be made. We talked about kind of the financial person, the person that you trust the most with the money, if that is a thing that you're doing. If you're nervous about that, don't do a thing with money, I think.
That's great advice.
Yeah. There's also like kind of what I'm going to lump into as the editor role. This is going to mean different things depending on the kind of project, but someone who is doing the technical setup work to get it out there. So podcasts need audio editors. Anything with a website needs a website editor. Crowdfunds need someone to write the text and make the pictures that appear on the page and post them up there. Printed projects need someone with affinity or InDesign assembling the book files. Like, there's the person who has to do the assembly in some way, whatever that means for that kind of project. So that could be one person, or that could be a team of people. It's good to split that part up, I think. And you've got kind of the internal communications, who, like the person who lets all the participants know of what's going on in the official updates. Like, and in creative projects, you might have like a work in progress space. I think that's actually a really good idea to like encourage asking questions or showing progress if anybody is along the way wondering what's going on, both to keep everyone's expectations aligned and also to have this morale boost as, hey, things are happening. This project is not dead in the water. And maybe this is a little passive reminder that I need to make progress on the project if I haven't done so already. And then separate from internal communications, I think there's an external communications role if a project needs outside support to happen, either because you need to attract new artists to contribute to your zine, or you need buyers to buy the zine or your bundle or whatever. So this person might have to take control of an existing social media account or make a new one, source pictures and words for posts for that, and schedule them up so that the supporters of your project know what's happening. So those are kind of the main roles that I would define as get those clarified for you, split them up as effectively as you can, That's going to make your life easier than just stumbling in and saying, I want to do a thing, and not necessarily knowing all the pieces, how the pieces will come together. And I think the other thing is morale. I feel like longer term projects, people do genuinely want to keep their word and do the thing that they signed up to do. And they signed up because they believed it would be good or fun. And the more you can remind them of those reasons, the easier time they'll have. So I think the first thing is to create an environment where you're regularly reminding people this is a good and fun project. And even though there are responsibilities, it's not meant to be a chore or a source of pressure. We're all doing this because we feel like it's worth doing on some level. Work in progress spaces help with that. I would definitely make a habit of regularly showing your enthusiasm for people's work on an individual basis. The goal is to make everyone feel like their contribution is being positively noticed, because people get into the mindset that when they're too absent or far behind, they're being negatively noticed. And that's just going to compound everything with like this guilt and shame, which are the very worst motivators that you want on a collaborative project. Do not go for guilt or shame. It's not good. Things you can do is, you know, work on your tone as an organizer when you yourself are behind or maybe feeling discouraged. You want to stay as optimistic as you can. You want to emphasize the progress that you've made. You want to highlight the things that are going well so that everybody feels like stuff really is going to happen and the work that they have done is being noticed and appreciated. You're human. You're not perfect. Sometimes things are going to fall behind. And so in those cases, I like giving options like, hey, we're a little bit behind on this. We're trying to decide on a direction to keep moving forward. So maybe here's a few options. Option A, if we just don't have the bandwidth right now, we could drop this part of the project entirely. Option B, if everyone is behind but feels like another couple of weeks would make a big difference, we can push back the deadline. Or option C, if someone feels like they have availability this week to make a 500 by 500 pixel banner and write a paragraph of copy, we can still stick with our original plan. Thoughts and feedback are welcome. And this tells people, I don't have all the answers and I don't expect you to either. We are all equals at this table trying to figure this out. And I feel like that just gives a nice little air clearing aura that you're not really interested in blaming anyone. You're just looking for a discussion on the best way forward. And I feel like people like being invited to solve a problem or feel like their opinion matters. So folks who are coming in with no bandwidth for ideas can just say, well, I like that second option you said, or someone might come up with something better that you hadn't even thought of. So just being attentive when you're in a situation like that can go a long way, and making sure that you keep it a collaborative process in all stages, I think goes a long way.
It's funny because, I mean, we're talking about collaborative projects and definitely like making sure to give your collaborators room to like use their own strengths, both for the work that they're making for the project itself. Obviously, you want them to like, you know, make a nice art if that's the thing that's being made, but also organizationally, especially if it's like your first ever project and one of your collaborators turns out to have experience in some side of the whole thing that like you don't have experience in, like using the strengths of multiple people together to make something bigger than you could do alone is sort of the biggest reason to do a collaborative thing in the first place. So definitely making sure to keep room for that kind of thing to come up. Like have conversations with the people that you're working with about the shape of the thing that you're going to make together. I think trying to be like too strict about things when it's your first time running it would be kind of a mistake. So just try to work with the people that you're in this with. My other kind of piece of advice for collaborative stuff is to try to keep things as like compact and small as possible, especially when it comes to the timeline. Part of the intent with the zines that I was running was that I wanted to have something that could go from like project inception to like a finished thing that was in the hands of the Kickstarter backers within less than a year. 8 months was usually the goal for like basically completion, 10 months for everything being fulfilled. And we did meet that each time. It was mostly like just keeping an eye on like the scope of the thing and setting down a timeline before we even approached people about like, here's when we like want the art by, here's when the campaign is going to go up, here's when the thing is going to be printed, and here's when it's going to be sent out to people. And keeping those dates as close together as we could without making things like impossible for the collaborators, because it was a one page illustration, definitely that side of things was less lengthy than it would have needed to be if we were doing like multi-page short stories or something. The tighter the project is, the less you'll need to worry about that stamina thing, about people kind of running out of morale. And you can kind of take advantage of that initial like burst of energy and ride on it for most of the project instead of riding on it for 5% of the project and then spending 90% of your time in like the slog of the middle where everybody's like, this is a lot of work and I don't see where we're going yet. So that's something to keep in mind. Generally, like, especially when you're getting started, don't jump straight into a, like, we're going to do like a 200 page anthology and it's going to get $100 million on Kickstarter, whatever, a huge thing. That's going to be a lot. So
I totally agree. And I think that part of that is also making sure that people get involved at the right stage. So you may have an idea for a project, and rather than tell everybody, yeah, we need to get on this project now, and I had this idea like 10 minutes ago, it's sit down and take time to sort of come up with your plan. And then when you're at the phase where you're okay, I am ready to start actually getting into the meat of the work, that's when you get a lot of the other participants involved so that you can keep that excitement and attention immediately and keep that focused. And I the biggest thing for me for keeping focus is making sure that, you know, that you have what you need when you need it. One of the biggest challenges that I think a lot of new collaborative work creators have is getting into the weeds of it and then discovering, oh wait, in order to do this step, we needed to have three others done a week ago. And then you'll get into the project and that's when delays start happening. So I think one thing that you can do is ahead of time, plan out, okay, what's the critical path for what we need to get from point A to point B? What we can't, like, for instance, you can't start printing books without the work, or you can't start the Kickstarter without X. Different things like that, that you can identify that, okay, this is going to be a point of a point where delays could start. And those are the things you start prioritizing early. And the other part of that is making sure that everybody on the team knows the dates and knows what the expectations are.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like being clear about that just makes you look like you're together and again, helps with the morale, because if you're floundering a lot, it makes people question like, you know, maybe you didn't have a good idea. Maybe this wasn't something you were ready to do, and I'm starting not to trust you with my time or my money or anything like that.
Yep, exactly. And one way that you can sort of get ahead of that is, you know, we didn't have a formal contract process when I made Being True. And there were a couple points in that in getting that project done where, boy, that was annoying that we hadn't done that. And it ended up making even the process of paying certain people arduous. We ended up paying everybody, but there were some people that didn't give addresses or filled out the form kind of jokingly. So for Starbound, we went in with a short contract. It didn't have any real fancy language and said, hey, I want to participate in this. Here is what the plan is, what the dates are, what financial incentives are in there for both the creator and the editorial team. And it just helps things feel way more professional. And people will bring their best work when they have that. And I think like being like, wow, I signed a contract for this. This is cool. It adds to the cool factor for your work and adds and helps keep morale going.
Yeah, just having your act together. People like being part of something that's like professional. And I feel like, especially in the space of webcomics, it's easy to be to feel like, oh, I'm working on my little story with my little guys and it's like a fun time and stuff. And we're not necessarily being recognized by publishers. We're not getting on bestseller lists. We're not making a lot of money. So collaborative projects are kind of one area where we're like, yeah, actually, we're all doing something kind of cool here, guys. Let's celebrate that. Let's recognize it. I think that's so amazing.
It's always good to recognize that. And part of that too is when you're done, if you're really happy with the end product, don't be afraid to boast about it, or not boast about it, but celebrate it. And you know, there's lots of different small award programs out there for different tiers. You could submit your work for things like that. And even just submitting can be a fun experience. I've been fortunate that Being True was selected for as a runner up for a Prism Award once. And that was just amazing to just be like, wow, even considered. And yeah. I didn't even think a year prior to that, I was just like, yeah, this is just going to be a fun little project I do. But if you take your time to execute it right, you can really celebrate a ton of people's work, and it's super rewarding. And I know for me that running the crowdfunding campaigns for both of those two projects were some of the most stressful months of my life, because like Delphi said, whereas if it's a crowdfunding for my own project, where it's like, ah, it's just little old me, you know, if it doesn't work, it'll be fine. Whereas, you know, for a collaborative project, it's okay, I really want this to succeed, because if this succeeds, all of these people succeed. And it's a really good feeling when you get across that finish line and can share other people's work like that. It's such a rewarding experience.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, I don't know. I feel like we have a very unique situation where we have a lot of communication tools in the internet, and yeah, we should use those. We should collaborate. We should make cool stuff. There's no reason not to. And I don't know if it's just my brain, but sometimes I have trouble like just celebrating the things I do for me. But absolutely, if I'm like rooting for a team, I'm like, okay, we have initiated the tribalism. Let's go.
Exactly. Exactly. Tap into that in positive ways.
Yes.
With that, I think we'll end on a positive note here and call this a bacon, lettuce, cheddar wrap. I've been Rennie. You can read my work at etherstarcomic.com.
And I've been Delphina, and you can read my comic Sombulus at sombulus.com.
And I'm Verithane. You can read my comics at chiralt.sevensmith.net and witchwoodcomic.com.
Now get out there and collaborate.
Yeah, let's make some pizza money. Ah,
start the party.
Let's make a 300-page anthology.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yes,
you're gonna do all the work, right?
I'll get back to you.
Thank you for listening to Screen Tones, a webcomic podcast. You can find all our episodes at screentonescast.com. We've got a couple links over there to our Ko-fi and merch shop, where your support will help us create more episodes and keep us talking about anything and everything webcomics. You can also find us on YouTube, Blue Sky, Tumblr, and our Discord server. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, rating, and supporting, and we'll see you next time.